Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with me, Tim Sylvie, and Tom OF1, who's standing in for Harry Benjamin while he's out on commentary duties. This is the place where we meet a figure from the world of motorsport and dive into their lives and careers, often uncovering truths you never knew existed. We've sat down with Formula One drivers, team principals, touring car stars, Le Mans and IndyCar winners, famous broadcasters, content creators and pioneers, all to make sure that you get behind the visor and hear from the world's biggest and most interesting names. If there's anyone with a story to tell, they usually tell it right here. Check us out at motormouth.club, download our app, check out our regular Motormouth kart race where you can race alongside the stars and support our partners at Movember and the Brain Tumor Charity. And don't forget, please subscribe to our show, leave a review, it really makes a difference. Find us on all the major podcast channels. In the meantime, sit back, relax, and enjoy the chat. Hello, Tim Sylvie here, and today we're joined by our third Formula One world champion on the show. He won it in the 1970s, and so Tom, with that in mind, let's test your 1970s F1 knowledge. Are you ready?
My specialist subject, Tim.
Right. Which driver led the most laps of the 1974 Formula One season?
Oh, okay, 1974... I'm going to say it might be a bit late, but I'm going to say Niki Lauda.
Niki Lauda? No, no, just kidding. It's correct.
Oh, see, yeah, you don't wind me up like that, Tim.
It was Niki Lauda. Emerson Fittipaldi won that year. He didn't get the most race wins. That belonged to Ronnie Peterson, but it was the late, great Niki Lauda that took the most laps. Well done, you. All right, question number two. What was so unusual about the Tyrrell P34 of 1976?
Was it that it had six wheels?
It did have six wheels. Absolutely
Did research
right.
Today.
Well done you. The idea being that more rubber on the track, the more stable the car. They ended that season third in the constructors, but by 1977, the team moved back to four. Well done. Two out of two. Very good. I'm sure that's impressed our guest. Talking of which, shall we introduce him?
Let's do it, Tim.
So today we're joined by 1979 Formula One world champion Jody Scheckter. In a year where he was racing against some impressive names, the likes of Mario Andretti, Niki Lauda, Nelson Piquet, John Watson, Patrick Tombay, Gilles Villeneuve, Emerson Fittipaldi, René Arnoux, James Hunt, Keke Rosberg, Alan Jones, Ricardo Patrese, and Jochen Mass. It was the South African man who took home the spoils. It's an honour to have him here with us today. Jody Scheckter, a very warm welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Jody, mate, where are you joining us from today? Because your background's not giving too much away.
Exactly. From London. I got a little flat in London.
So what was life like when you were growing up back in the 50s and 60s? What was South Africa like? Set the scene for us.
Oh, it's probably 10 or 20 years behind here. Lots of fights, lots of drinking. You could drive and drink at the same time there. All sorts of things. I mean, there was very little restriction on anything as far as I remember. It's quite wild.
Different era completely. So how did cars come onto your radar in the first place? Because were those lack of restrictions, like, was that part of how you got into cars in the first place?
No, in fact, the Grand Prix in 1936, I think, somewhere around there, was in East London, South Africa. And my dad had a garage, and then there was always racing around there. My uncle raced in 37. And they had a race in the middle of the year, which was a sort of regional or at least South African one. And then they had the Grand Prix at the end of the year where Moss drove and everything. I think what I was about 63 and I was 13 or something like that. And so racing was all around.
And I think it's fair to say you had one speed when you started, and that was just extremely fast. And in your first national race, you were black flagged for dangerous driving before you started to really hone your craft and become competitive and start winning. Was that speed a reflection of your personality at the time? Were you just a bit of a hothead, bit reckless, or was it just a case that you hadn't quite honed it yet?
I've never thought of it like that, but probably the hothead thing is probably right. Yeah, it was wild. It was wild in those days. I don't really know. Actually, I remember going to a go-kart, and go-karts weren't like they are today. And my brother was driving, and I was driving, and they said, he'll never be any good, that's me, because he's sliding the car all over the place, and my brother was much more smooth, so I wasn't going to make it. But that was when we were very young. Did a little bit of go-karting. I was last in my class in school, and I said to my parents, if I come in the top four, will you get me a go-kart? And they said, well, that's a safe bet. And I came fourth.
Oh, you just got in, just on the car. So what was, you say your brother drove and like other family members, what were they like as drivers? Were you clearly quicker than them, or was everyone quite competitive in the family?
No, I mean, you didn't do enough racing there to compare whether you were or not. I was useless at school and loved to go to the workshop. So every holiday I went to the workshop and worked on my bike, because you started racing bikes at that stage. When you were 16, you could get a 50cc bike license. And of course, mine wasn't 50cc, it was a little bit more. And then at 18, you get your driver's license. And I just spent all my time in the workshop, which I love to do.
So at what point did you decide to leave home and move across to Europe? When did that happen?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first car I built myself, engine, gearbox, everything, modifications and everything. And then Ford lent me a Formula Ford, because I was doing quite well in saloon cars, which was very big in South Africa at that time. And Ford lent me a car, and I won, was the first South African in that series, which was, like I said, which gave me a drive to Europe, 3 months in Europe. And they lent me a car and a trailer, and I had to do the rest.
And we mentioned your potential at that stage. Your hot-headedness perhaps was a reflection of the speed and the way you were driving. When you came across to Europe, you were doing Formula Ford, Formula 3. Do you think that temperament was a help or a hindrance at that point in your career?
No, I think you take it further. I think I always slid the car. My nickname was Sideways. And that's the way I drove, and I could drive around problems. It didn't matter what the car was doing, and maybe I learned that running cars at the early days that weren't working too well, and you had to work around them. So that was an advantage when you got into the race and you had a bad car. But in testing, whatever they did, I just drove around the problem. So you never really, I think I never really got the car in races as good as the other guys got, because I had to drive around it. I just went for fastest lap, whatever it was. And so it was an advantage and a disadvantage. And also, as the tires got more to the edge, because in the olden days, the more you slid, the hotter the tires got and the faster you were. I mean, at Brands Hatch, I think in the one race, I was a second and something ahead of everybody else. It was wet and cold, only because I was sliding the car and the temperatures came up. So it was an advantage and disadvantage.
Yeah, it definitely slid around more in those days, looking at some of the footage over the last couple of days that we've been looking at. But do you think, I mean, we're going to come on to modern Formula One, but just while we're on it, when you talk about when you're doing your laps, you're given a crap piece of machinery, but you still manage to adapt and find a way to make it quick. Do you look at modern drivers and think, oh, come on, boys, like, man up a little bit. You know, you've got these incredible machines and they fiddle around with front wings and rear wings and different settings and moan on the radio. Do you sort of think, just come on, get on with it. If you're that good, make it quick.
No, I think it's probably the same. I think there's some drivers that can drive a car when it's not quite right. And there's some drivers that need the car to be right. And they can drive, you know, fast. And I don't think that's, from that point of view, it's changed at all. It's much smaller now because they know everything. We didn't know anything. Yeah. You just thought, well, the softer the suspension was, the more it was gripping. And I went softer and softer. And I think it probably was bad because the aerodynamics were changing and didn't really know what we were doing.
And when you were coming up the ranks in the junior formulas, were you a bit of an anomaly in terms of you had that real understanding of how to build cars and how to actually work on the car from a mechanical point of view? Do you think that helped you out?
Well, certainly at the very early stages, because I was the one who was working on the car. I mean, with the Renault, the first car, I built the engine, the gearbox, cut the pistons with a hacksaw, got glass down and filed them like this, and then got valves and put cutters on and drilled it like that so the pistons had, what's the name? I mean, I went and put some big valves in. So I got it and I turned it around like this until they were just missing visually. And then I started it up and about 3,000 revs, it dropped a valve. So I took it out and cut a little bit more until it got to 8,000 revs. And then I had the biggest valves you could ever get in there. So it was just, I wasn't doing very technical stuff, but I enjoyed
that's so it. Like, where did you learn all that? Was that from your old man or just pick it up?
No, it was just read about things and looked at stuff. I mean, I'm telling too many stories, but I was in my bed once and we had my, school books there. My dad said, oh, that's good. And looked inside, it was how to modify two strokes. So I wasn't cared about school. I was useless. All I worried about is, you know, going faster and doing engines and stuff like that.
Are you still tinkering around with cars? I know you've still got a collection of F1 cars and single seaters. Are you still messing around with them, fiddling around?
No. I thought about it, but, you know, in those days it was easy because you're doing it all the time. When you're not doing it and you go and start working on a car, it's tough. Yeah.
Now, we've had a number of former and current F1 drivers on the show, and we always ask them what it was like the first time they stepped into a Formula One car and put their foot down. And actually, most of the modern drivers say the most impressive feeling they have is the braking rather than the acceleration. Do you remember your first time in a Formula One car and that visceral feeling and the emotions that you felt?
Well, it was the first I remember, and I'm not sure if I tested before that, was Watkins Glen. So Lotus offered me a drive at the end of my second year. Yeah. And then McLaren said, we'll give you a drive. So I was driving at Watkins Glen. I always remember just going faster and it's still stuck to the road and you went quicker and quicker and quicker. And that I thought, well, wow, it's got a lot of grip. I mean, compared to what they've got today, it's just minute, you know. But that was the difference between Formula 2 and Formula One.
And in terms of different kind of tracks and circuits, how much experience did you have? Like, obviously coming over from South Africa and racing in Europe and Watkins Glen, had you raced a lot in the States? Had you raced a lot in Europe and a lot of different tracks by that stage in your career?
No, I hadn't. I raced in South Africa or three tracks or something like that. And then came over and did Formula Ford here. And Formula 2, Formula 3, then Formula 2, and then Formula 1. So I hadn't driven anywhere, just Europe and South Africa.
Now, we have to ask you about the big shunt that everyone remembers at Silverstone, Woodcock. Presumably, you remember that fairly clearly. I mean, you came to a halt in the track before it all really kicked off. How do you remember, how do you look back at that? Do you remember the feeling of sitting in the car thinking, oh, God, like there's a lot of cars charging towards me. This is probably going to hurt. Just before we get into that, bear with me for 2 minutes. I must tell you about our new sponsors of the show, and it's one that means a great deal to us all on a very personal level here at the Motor Mouth Podcast. In 2021, Dana, the founder of Motus One, passed away suddenly and without warning whilst visiting family in the States. Dana was one of my very best friends. The legacy he left with his family and his business is incredible, and I'm hugely humbled and proud to have his booming business as part of this show. Sponsors are vital for our survival, and make sure we continue to bring you interviews with the biggest names in racing. So if you or your company needs event transportation, look no further than the team at Motus One. They have you covered anywhere in the world, from a single chauffeur-driven sedan to a fleet of luxury SUVs, Teslas, or motor coaches. Find your transportation solution with Motus One. They've got offices worldwide, including the Middle East, Europe, and Africa, and will support your transportation needs regardless of location. Motus One is committed to world-class service at the very best rates to ensure your event goes off without a hitch. Contact them at motusone.com. We'll put all their social links in the podcast description. A massive, massive thanks to Dana, his wife Claudia, his kids, the rest of the Motus One team. Thank you for having faith in our show and joining us for season 12. Right, back to it. On with the show.
I was sliding like that, and I thought if I let the brakes go, I would go. Then I hit the wall and came out. But when I looked up, the cars were just crashing before they hit me. So I put my head down like this. And then when I looked up again, there was some more coming. Put my head down again. I mean, it was, you didn't think about it, really. You just try to get out of the way. And yeah, I was massively lucky.
Yeah.
I always say the thing I achieved in racing was coming out alive.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there were 1 to 2 drivers killed every year.
Now, talking of crashes, there's a pivotal moment that's been well documented in your career. Jackie Stewart retired. You were going to line up alongside Francois Sauveur, but he was killed during practice for a race. You were one of the first on the scene, and it's been reported that that changed the way you viewed the sport. When you look back at that now with the years that have happened in between, do you still sort of earmark that as the point where you thought, right, I'm going to change tack here. This is going to change the way I race in the future?
No, definitely not. But it's the first time I'd seen somebody that was had died or was dying or was dead. And it sort of, I thought, well, everybody's carrying on like it's normal, you know. And no, I didn't think that. I think if anybody sort of slowed me down, it was probably Ken, you know, shouting at me all the time.
Well, because, I mean, Jackie was one of the first kind of really high-profile drivers to really push the whole safety, because like you said, there was an acceptance back then that, oh, well, this is just part of it, because it always had been. Like, do you remember those kind of conversations at the time? And I imagine there was probably some pushback towards Jackie for him trying to improve the sport, again, from a safety point of view, because it was unacceptably dangerous back then.
Well, I think it was unacceptably, even through my own. But I did a lot to do with to try and make it safer.
Now, I want to pick up on your experience with Ferrari. So, Enzo Ferrari, a man that is very familiar to a lot of racing fans, but a bit of an enigma as well. What was he like?
Well, he was very tough. Everybody was really scared of him. He was very smart. He tried to put people against each other. So I remember after the first race was in Brazil, and I came back and he asked me, you know, what was the car like? And I said, no, well, the Fords are quicker out the, you know, got quicker out the corner, out the, going up the straight, and they have more acceleration. And they wouldn't translate to him. The engine guy would have got fired, I think. And so and I said, but tell him. No, they wouldn't tell him. No.
That's, so have you seen the movie Rush, Jody?
Yeah, but I can't remember.
I was going to ask if that was like an accurate portrayal, because there's a scene in that where like Niki Lauda's like giving feedback and saying it's a piece of shit, and they're like, you can't say that because it's a Ferrari. Like, was it very much that? Because I think that's kind of held Ferrari back as well, that kind of attitude, in my opinion.
No, yeah, you really could not say anything negative against Ferrari. And you know, at that time before, when I came in, the Italian press liked to put the fighting between the two drivers, and that was very common. And, you know, I just said, listen, you guys, we're internally, we're not going to get hold of that. And we didn't. We didn't worry about the external.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Papers and what they were saying and everything like that. It's funny, I look back, I've never had a bad word with any of my teammates. And I think what goes on these days, everybody's sort of, you know, I know you, that's your biggest competitor, but everybody seems to be fighting, which is a negative for everybody.
Now, let's talk 1979, the year. Gilles Villeneuve is your teammate, you're racing in a Ferrari, you win the Formula One World Championship. The first South African, I think the only South African to do it since. Take us through the emotions that season and how it felt to realise that ambition.
Well, it was, you know, Jill won the first two races or beat me in the first two races. So I had signed as number one, was in my contract. And so I was number two at that stage. So, you know, you had to get down. I said, well, this is, I've got to, you know, I've got to lift my game and that. And that's what I did. And it was... The difference when you're going for a championship was the tension was the same when you were at the track and not at the track. It was all. Before, it was like every 2 weeks you were racing, sort of went up and down. So it was stress, like, you know, massive stress. Just trying to make sure that everything you did all the time was to go faster.
Did you feel like you handled that pressure quite well at that time, in that moment?
Yeah. I mean, I think... Yeah, I don't think I've ever felt that I did badly because of pressure. Mm. Yeah. Well, I think once in Monaco, my legs started jumping like this. What's your name? But otherwise, it probably pushed me to do better.
Because I was going to ask, actually, obviously 79 was your title winning season, but do you think that was your best season? Because obviously there could be other seasons where you just had really bad luck and you actually felt you drove better or worse. Do you think that was your best season, or is there an underrated Jody Scheckter season there?
No, I think I could have and should have won the championship when I was the first year with Wolf. Hmm. Thinking back, I never ever thought of winning the championship. And I think that was probably the biggest problem. Because you were just thinking, you were a small team. I remember James Hunt saying, well, he's out of the way because we won the first race. He's out of the way. It's not going to make any difference because they didn't think I'd be competitive. But I think I was just trying to beat people and not try to win the championship, because I could have very easily won the championship then.
A very quick interruption to remind you to check out our sponsors, Motus One, the event transportation company. Motus One is the industry leader in complex transport management, from hospitality, talent, production crews, VIPs, and artist transport. Motus One's team have got you covered. They've also launched their leading-edge cloud-based event transportation management system called Motus Ride. Now you can manage your entire event transport program digitally. Make bookings, allocate rides, create approval processes, see reports, track costs, loads more. Head over to motus1.com and hear how they can support your event transportation needs. Back to the show. What was it like driving at Monaco? Because it's an incredible racetrack, full of history. Some people love it now, some people don't. It's staying on the calendar, which I think is great. What was it like tearing around there in those cars back in the day? Was it absolutely terrifying?
No. That was the race track that I did the best out of any racetrack, because I won twice and I was second and third and stuff like that. So, I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, all of the hooligan stuff when I was back in East London. So I got there, but I mean, and qualifying was everything. You know, you had to, if you qualified well, you had a chance of winning. If you qualified well and got to the front, you really had won the race unless something happened. And both when I was with the Wolf, the last lap I crashed going around the swimming pool. And with the Ferrari, because it was Jill was going, it was Jill and I was pole, he was pole, I was pole like this. And so I was at the touching the outside guardrail as with the back wheel, as he slid at the back wheel. And he was still quicker than me. So then I started touching the inside guardrail with the right-hand front tire and then hitting, you know, you're just touching a little bit. The last lap, the front suspension went like that. So I suppose I got it timed absolutely to the, you know, the next lap wouldn't have got around. You know.
Certainly prepared to push that. That's insane. What I would like to ask actually, Jody, is like, obviously being in this F1 kind of, especially Monaco, where it's all very fancy and there's loads of like, rich and wealth and all that. And obviously you're coming from pretty like humble beginnings. How did you find that side of the sport, all the glamour and all that? Because it was obviously, it's still very ostentatious now, but even like back in the day, it was like Monaco was that kind of crown jewel event in F1, which was, you know, very privileged. Kind of paddock to be.
I lived in Monaco, but listen, I never ever got involved or worried about that sort of rubbish, you know, if you're wealthy or not wealthy or anything like that. Didn't make any difference, and it still doesn't make any difference to me. You're either a nice guy, you're not a nice guy.
Are you not financially driven? Because you've been very successful post racing. You've started businesses. You've had very successful businesses. Is that a driver for you? Is the finance something that is important to you or has been?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was, but I think it was really to feel secure, I think, more than anything, and to be challenged. I never thought I'm going to make some more money, although I remember sitting with Guy Edwards once, and he said, the first one to get 100,000, you know, and then it was the first one to get 1,000,000. And then America was very successful from my point of view. I started on the kitchen table, and in 12 years, we were in 35 different countries. We had 95% of the world market. And that was as big an achievement as racing to myself. Yeah. The last 3 years were $29, $60, $100 million sales.
Amazing. Is that company still with you, or have you sold that business?
No, we sold it right at the time. And went public 2 months after we sold it.
Wow. Amazing. Now, because you retired early, comparatively speaking, you retired at 30 years old. Do you ever wish you'd kept going?
No, definitely not. You know, Renault offered me, say, whatever money you want, right? I think it was in Canada. And I said, no, I've made up my mind. I'm going out. You know, 1 to 2 drivers were killed every year. I think the real, what do you call it? The real specialness of Formula One had gone from me, because I saw a lot of things where they didn't look at the driver safety and stuff that was going on. And I suppose the magic sort of left, and I thought, well, then I must do something else.
And when you look at Formula One in this kind of current era where we are in 2022, like if you'd have grown up in this era, how do you think you would have, not even just from where you would have competed, but do you think you would have, because the sport's so different now to what it was back in the 70s.
I would have blown off everybody. No, I'm joking. Actually, I don't think I'd be. You know,
good answer.
When qualifying, we had qualifying tires at some stage. So you did one lap, and then they were much faster, and you couldn't. The second lap, they were just rubber finished. And I wasn't really good at that because I like to feel the car and go up. And today, it seems like it's the one lap more that you have to go quick, and I probably wouldn't be that competitive under that situation. But you never know. You adapt to what you need to do.
Yeah.
Who is the greatest that you've ever shared a track with?
Oh, good question.
Oh, there's another question. I mean, you know, it was Niki Lauda, was Emerson. I suppose those were the two guys that stood out at that time, yeah.
And
I have another question. Which driver, if you could race against any driver, who would you drive against? You know, and everybody was, oh, Fangio or whatever. So I looked up in the specs to see where the worst driver had the worst results ever. And I said, I want to drive against him.
and they'd be your teammate, so it makes you look even better. of the current grids in F1, who would you say, which driver reminds you the most of you? I guess that's kind of in terms of how they drive, but also just maybe how they just carry themselves. Who's the modern day Jody Scheckter?
I think Lewis at the beginning. The big difference is I crashed and he didn't. maybe Verstappen, but you know, I mean, he's obviously become much better than I ever was. But he was very lethal at the beginning. I didn't like it because I didn't think he had any respect for other drivers. I remember, when Rosberg were going for the championship? I think it was the last race. And he pushed him over off the track. And I thought, you know, just imagine if he had crashed that, he would have stopped the guy winning a championship. He wasn't involved in it. If I wasn't going for the championship, I respected the other drivers and didn't really fight them as much as I would if it wasn't.
Yeah.
I let him through. I didn't stop him from going through at Watkins Glen when he was going for the championship. And I could have held him back easily.
Do you think, you've gone on to have this career in business and now you've got the farm and that's become a very big thing that's grown organically over time. And you've got plenty of factories there that, you're doing a lot of business there. Do you think Formula One set you up at all for that kind of thing? Do you think what you've learned in F1 has helped from a business perspective?
Before I heard that, the farm has been financially a disaster. we've made fantastic products, but it's a disaster. Formula One, it's funny, it helps you in every way, but it's developing technology very fast and getting ready for an event. Whether you're a policeman, a racing driver, or going to war, those fundamentals are the same. And so when I got into doing the company in America, we were making simulators to train police that would go into a shooting and military that would go into war. So the two fundamentals were the same. I moved technology much faster than anybody else. And then I set them up so they could really learned to do what they did when they went into an event. I remember the one guy that was training on our system just lost it in LAPD because it put so much stress on them, like it would have done in a shooting. And that's what the whole thing was about.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've kind of not been, I guess some drivers post their career, we've kind of put their feet up and just chill, but it sounds like you very much haven't done that. And that's like, I mean, that's so interesting. Like, when you think today, now, what in life kind of right now is the thing that gives you like the most excitement and enjoyment at the minute?
So I always say I've had sort of four careers or four things that I'm proud of. One was racing. The next was America. And the farm, yes, I'm proud of it because it's awesome. And I won the World Superstars, as a race driver. I beat all the other athletes. I mean, Moses was his world championship, his own world championship, I think he broke 8 times or something like that. So as a race driver, I was very proud of that.
That's great. Now, listen, Jody, we won't keep you too much longer, but we do have a final three quickfire questions that we ask all of our guests, and these are brought to us by our sponsors over at Motus One. Tom, why don't you kick off with the first one?
Sure. So right now, today, what's got you most excited in life, Jody, which I've kind of asked that already, but
My next career is going to be on the beach, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Nice.
Sounds like good idea to me. How much of your success do you put down to luck and right place, right time, and how much is down to other things like sheer hard work?
Well, I always say the secret to success is hard work. And some people do it without hard work. I always felt I could work harder than anybody else. But are you lucky? Yeah, of course you're lucky all the time. Hopefully you make your own luck.
Final question, Jody. What are you scared of?
What am I scared of? I used to hate flying. It was worse than going, you know, I was more scared of flying in an aeroplane than, but I don't worry anymore. What am I most scared of? Not a lot. especially after a couple of drinks.
What's your drink of choice?
It used to be whiskey. Now I drink in red wine.
Yeah, I like red.
I have a barrel of whiskey.
Wow.
At my place. So it's, and I put a little tap on it. So
straight down the throat, no glass, just sit under the tap.
Well, I've got a video where I went underneath and turned the tap on.
Are any of your business ventures related to kind of drink at all? Because quite a few of the current drivers, like Bottas has a gin brand, Ricardo's done wine as well. So I think that's quite a popular thing for drivers to do.
He's done his wine.
Well, we made sparkling wine. We don't anymore, but we still got. And we were nominated for the Queen's Jubilee sparkling wine.
Wow.
So it was a very, very good product. Financially, it didn't work. In the food business or that, it's got to be volume.
Yeah.
So you can make the best product, you can charge what you like, but the only way you make money in food is volume.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jody, it's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for your time. Best of luck with the farm and all your other business endeavors. Best of luck getting through that barrel of whiskey, and hopefully we'll see you on the farm soon.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it, you guys.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.